Okay. Reading from the scriptures, Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not part from it. And then reading from Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. I've quoted this before to you. Socrates once said, by all means marry. If you get a good wife, you will become very happy. If you get a bad one, you will become a philosopher, and that is good for any man. If God has been gracious to you and given you a husband or a wife, I know that you want to be a good spouse to them. We all want to have a happy, healthy marriage. And if we have been blessed by children in our homes, I know we want to be the very best parents that we can be. I remember when I became a parent. I drove away from the hospital after having lost a night of sleep, and I tearfully thanked God for my son and promised God I would be the best dad a man could be and faithfully raise my children for him. Then when Paul was born, I went through it all again, thanking God and promising him my loyalty and commitment to parent like he would want me to. I'm sure you felt the same way. In retrospect, though, I kicked myself because I think I failed a lot. I didn't always listen as I should have. I jumped to conclusions. My expectations were higher than they should have been. But I know my heart's desire for my sons has never wavered. I wanted the very best for them, as I do now. And I want to do whatever I can that they may succeed before God and as citizens. Parenting is a dry run, and our children don't come with owner's manuals or warranties. I guess I'm just confessing that I'm no expert. It's the same for everyone. We simply must trust God and go for broke. People have different expectations and even concepts of what good parents are. But I don't think the sentiments of raising children are better summarized than they are in this little poem I took out of a Mennonite cookbook. It's called Training the Other Woman's Child. They all sat around in friendly chat, discussing mostly this and that and a hat. Until a neighbor's wayward lad was seen to act in ways quite bad. Oh, 'twas sad. One thought she knew what must be done with every child under the sun. She had none. And ere her yarn had been quite spun, another's theories were begun. She had one. The third was not so sure she knew, but thus and so she thought she'd do. She had two. The next one added, let me see, these things work out differently. She had three. The fifth drew on her wisdom store and said, I'd have to think it o'er. She had four. And then one sighed, I don't contrive, fixed rules for boys, they're too alive. She had five. I know it leaves one in a fix, this straightening of crooked sticks. She had six. And one declared, there's no rule given but to do your best and trust to heaven. She had seven. I like the lady with seven the best. But there are two families that I think did a pretty good job of raising kids. One was Samuel and Susanna Wesley, parents of John and Charles Wesley, along with 17 other children. The other was William and Catherine Booth, founders of the Salvation Army and parents of eight children, all of whom served the Lord in India, France, Switzerland, and the U.S. One son said of his childhood, "None of us grew up slackers. None of us played with life." In 1902, William Booth wrote a book called Love, Marriage, and Home. In two of the chapters he wrote on training your children for Christ, these chapters are filled with sound advice we could all use and benefit from. I'd like to share some of this with you. Written in 1902, we may have to adapt some of it for today. But I think William Booth presented a very sound philosophy of rearing children. I think we can glean from it some helpful thought. First, there are specific things we must proactively do as parents. We must keep the goal, that of training our children, to love and serve God constantly before our minds. We must believe it is possible to lead our children into a life of faithful service to God. And then we must be a holy example. Now listen to this, because this is the whole philosophy of parenting summarized in two sentences. We must create and confirm in the hearts of our children that we ourselves are what we want them to become. So we practice daily the unselfish love and righteousness that we must ask of them. Now, part of the problem we have today is that parents have no philosophy of their parenting. And so I'm going to repeat this. We must create and confirm in the hearts of our children that we ourselves are what we want them to become. So we practice daily the unselfish love and righteousness that we must ask of them. In other words, we live moral and spiritual lives and guide our children into a moral life like our own. I think I hear the echo of another saint. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. 1 Corinthians 11:1. That's the Apostle Paul, of course. And fourth, we must teach our children what pure and unadulterated Christianity is. We must help them to understand it and to admire it. And then we as parents must help our children understand what we ask of them is right and reasonable. And so we appeal to their conscience and judgment and not to their feelings. We must come down to the capacity of their intelligence. Sixth, we must make following Christ a part of our everyday life. Faith in God must be the atmosphere of our home. We must aim at a distinct experience of conversion in our children. And this is the line that separates the righteous from the wicked. God's own fingers have drawn that line. There is a moment when human beings, adults or children, cease to be the servants of the devil and become the servants of God. That line and moment may be approached so gradually as to be crossed almost without notice. But with all who become the children of God, that moment does arrive and that line is crossed. And then they pass from darkness to light, from death to life. In other words, they are saved. And eighth, we must cultivate kindness in our children and not tolerate cruelty of any kind in them. Being mean to a kitten or frightening a puppy is only a short step away from sneering at a beggar and mocking the poor or lame. And then we must promote our children's health. We must cultivate a healthy mind in our children. Our children must learn to be good workers. Recently, a friend of mine told me how his son phoned him and thanked him for cultivating a work ethic in him. He is getting contracts at 24 years of age that many older people are not, because people know that from him the work will be done well and on time. We must teach our children to work. And then we must rely on the Holy Spirit to bless our efforts. The next thing William Booth says is crucial in raising our children to serve the Lord. It is cultivating a disposition of obedience. We can never expect our children to obey God if they do not obey us as parents. Booth says, "It is impossible to overestimate this importance. Forming the habit of ready and willing submission to your will prepares them in forming the habit of obedience to God, which is more important than anything else." He says, "Begin early." It's astonishing how soon the infant in its mother's arms can be taught that it must do her will and not its own. "Don't give too many commands," he says, "but make sure your children understand the commands you give them and be certain your requests are carried out." Then he says, "Be careful that every command you give your child is within their ability to carry it out. We would never ask our child to carry luggage they couldn't lift, yet we often don't apply the same logic in other arenas of life." And then fourth, "Your commands must be lawful and good. In all of our hearts is written the law of God. Commands that are not good create moral confusion." And your child must understand your disapproval of all disobedience. Only in this way can the universal principle of reward for virtue and punishment for vice be understood. And disobedience must be met with suitable consequences or punishment. But before we discipline, it is imperative that we examine the motive of our child's behavior first. Benjamin West was just trying to be a good babysitter for his little sister Sally. While his mother was out, Benjamin found some bottles of colored ink and proceeded to paint Sally's portrait. But by the time Mrs. West returned, ink blots stained the table, chairs, and floor. Benjamin's mother surveyed the mess without a word until she saw the picture. Picking it up, she exclaimed, "Why, it's Sally!" And she bent down and kissed her young son. In 1763, when he was 25 years old, Benjamin West was selected as history painter to England's King George III. He became one of the most celebrated artists of his day. Commenting on his start as an artist, he said, "My mother's kiss made me a painter." Her encouragement did far more than a rebuke ever could have done. If God is our standard, as parents, we will know when to say, "What a mess," or "Why, it's Sally." This is how William Booth taught that moral character is cultivated in a child's life. Then William Booth outlines what we as parents must not do in our attempt to cultivate a Christian sensitivity in our children. We must never set things that are earthly and temporal above things that are heavenly and eternal. Then he says, "If you do, you can't complain if your children grow up to prefer the world and its charms to following Christ in a life of holiness and self-denial." Don't ever allow things that produce the impression on your children's minds that making money or pleasing ungodly people or winning the praise of men or gratifying themselves or anything else of the kind is or ever can be of greater value than pleasing God. And then don't fool yourself into thinking that if your children are left to themselves, they will naturally develop into godly, holy, self-sacrificing characters. If children don't actually bring evil natures into the world with them, they certainly acquire selfish and naughty hearts very soon after they're here. You need to recognize that fact and to face it with courage and faith, not only for their sakes, but for your own. So don't expect that children who possess any backbone of resolution and energy will be likely to submit their wills first to their parents and then to God without a great deal of patient and persevering effort on your part. Thirdly, don't expect your children to be so naive that they won't see beneath the cloak of false Christianity, especially in their own home. If they do see this, they will despise the faith. And don't expect your children to be better in character and conduct than the example set before them by you, their friends, and the people they spend their time with. Then William Booth says this: if you allow them to associate with half-hearted churchgoers, the worldly Pharisees, or backsliders, then don't be surprised if they are cursed by those examples and driven from God and true Christianity. Children are likely to suffer more harm by staying one day in the house of a make-believe follower of Christ than they would spending a month in a tavern where they'd be on their guard because they knew the devil reigned there. And then fifthly, don't contaminate the love of beauty which exists in the hearts of all children through the destructive vice of vanity. Life is not a fashion show, and the issues of character can never be developed by such a focus. And then closely related to this is this: don't fill your children's minds with the idea of their supposed superiority, mental or otherwise, over their friends, schoolmates, and others around them, and then be surprised when they go out into life as unhappy slaves of an ambition to climb above everyone else, which will alone be enough to destroy all their real peace of mind. And then seventh, don't allow your boys to think that they're more important or of greater value than their sisters, and then be surprised if they grow up to look down on and domineer over women generally, and to treat their own mother or their wives as if they belong to an inferior race. This false idea of superiority, if planted in a boy's heart, will in later life produce the spirit of real tyranny. In 2016, after the effects of the feminist movement, That advice applies equally to girls and women. There is no gender bias here. And I'm going to say something else here. I believe that the little adage, girls rule and boys drool, is as wicked as taking the Lord's name in vain. After the advances of the feminist movement, with many of the advantages that were necessary, this world cannot afford a pendulum swinging the other way. And this is happening. The equality that was sought in the feminist movement is rapidly becoming a new inequality for men. And I will repeat on the heels of this: ideas have consequences. And this needs to be paid attention to in our society. And I know what I'm talking about here, because I raised two sons. And then I like Booth's words here: don't instill or allow anybody else to instill into the hearts of your girls the idea that marriage is the chief end of life. If you do, don't be surprised if they get engaged to the first empty, useless fool they come across. Only Booth could have said it so well. And don't pamper or spoil your children. This simply induces whining and complaining and an insistence on having their own way. We have all seen the child throwing the temper tantrum in the mall or grocery store while the parent appears helpless and defeated. Someone recently told me, the greatest form of abuse against children today is overindulgence. Actually, that someone was Dale. Don't encourage selfishness in your children. In their infancy, children are ordinarily carried away by the desire for self-gratification. Your first business is to lead them in the opposite direction, to make them forget and deny themselves, and to delight in serving others. And don't make favorites among your children. If you do, you can expect them to grow up with a festering sense of injustice. They will despise your partiality and forget any of the love you have ever given them. And I've seen this, where the favorite child ends up hating their parents because they see them as unjust. And lastly, don't let your children have their own way by giving them whatever they want just to keep the peace. This especially if it is against your own judgment of what is best for them. This will instill in them that you don't believe yourself, and they will not take your judgments seriously. In the second chapter of Luke, beginning at verse 41, we read of Jesus going to Jerusalem with his parents. In the throng of people, Mary and Joseph assumed that Jesus was with them on the return trip. Realizing he wasn't, they returned to Jerusalem looking for him for 3 days. They found him in the temple with the teachers of the law. And in verse 48, his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." And Jesus' response, "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" Then in verse 51 and 52, "Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men." I hope you find some of these instructions as convicting for you as I have found that they've been for me. None of us have a guarantee of that our children will turn out as we've planned. We know that all human beings are instilled with free will, and that by God Himself. They have the power to break God's heart as well as yours, or to please Him as well as you. But I think these instructions give us at least a good chance to be successful. Parenting is not like a recipe. You just add the ingredients, stir vigorously, and out will come wonderful, well-adjusted children. But with God on our side, and with patient endurance and encouragement of the Christian community, we can expect God's desire realized in our children's lives. One day a farmer was visiting with a man, and he asked him why he didn't bring his son to Sunday school. And the man said, "Well, I don't want to prejudice my son. If he is interested in religion, he can go. But I would like to see him make that decision on his own." And the astute farmer said, "Come outside with me. I'd like to show you my garden." And the farmer took him out to an uncultivated patch of ground. And the man said, "This is not a garden. It's just an overgrown patch of weeds." "Oh no," said the farmer. "This is my garden. I just don't want to prejudice it in any way. I want my garden to have the freedom to express itself any way it would like." Point made, point taken. When children don't have parameters or structure, They take that responsibility on themselves. They then live in chaos, and then chaos gets in them. When they live in structure, they relax and recognize that they don't have to take on that responsibility. Children are inbred with a need to know what their boundaries are. They need a fence, and they need to know where it is. And then one last thing. When parents are asked what the most important thing that they should tell their child is, you know what the majority say? It's easy. That you love them. But that is not true. The greatest fear kids have today is not war or poverty or even having no friends. The greatest fear kids have today is the breakup of their parents by divorce. That is their number one fear, the dissolution of their family. Therefore, the most important thing that a parent can tell their child is, I love your mother and I will never leave her. Or, I love your father and I will never leave him. If their greatest fear is their family security, then the anecdote is to repeat to them your marriage promises. It is to share with them your marriage vows. And so, let us train a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Amen? God bless you.